Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Rambana and Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 1 million union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
Governor Ron DeSantis would like to take a few more state agencies under his wing. The state's agriculture commissioner, though, is not pleased.
But now that a Democrat sits in this office, the first woman ever elected to this office, it suddenly needs to be moved.
Also tonight, another state agency faces fiscal challenges and may be in line for a legislative reprieve. At least, that's the idea.
Particularly in healthcare, there's not enough money to go around, so we do our best.
We'll also examine a bill that both fans of local government and human rights are upset about and find that the plight of Hurricane Michael victims remains on the radar screen of the state's chief financial officer. It also helps he's from Panama City. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. A committee bill in the Florida House looks to move the State Office of Energy out from under its current agency. Ryan Daly reports Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried is calling it a power grab by Republicans.
The purpose of this conforming bill is to transfer the Office of Energy within the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services to the Department of Environmental Protection.
That's Republican Representative Holly Roshine, who chairs the committee. The Office of Energy has been under the Department of Agriculture for the past 9 years. In terms of staffing and funding, Roshine says, exactly what's in place under the Department of Agriculture will be moved over to DEP.
Which transfers 14 full-time equivalent positions, $539,080 in general revenue funds, and $1,214,900 in trust fund authority.
The Office of Energy evaluates energy-related studies and stakeholder input in order to recommend energy policies and programs to the governor and lawmakers. Roshine faced questions from her colleagues on the panel as to why the move is being proposed now.
It seems that over the last 9 years, the Department of Energy, or what are we calling it, the Office of Energy, has been operating pretty well. So I'm trying to understand the justification for shifting it when it seems to be working so well from one agency to another.
Roshine replied, saying the office's jurisdiction fits well under DEP.
We talk about clean water, we talk about clean air, we talk about clean energy. So it's a very acceptable place to put the Office of Energy.
The committee's vice chair, Republican Representative Rick Roth, had questions about costs.
Is there any anticipated cost savings due to being able to consolidate responsibilities?
Roshine didn't have a clear answer.
But in the long run, in the long term, I would imagine there could be some savings. I just wouldn't know what those are right now.
After the House panel passed the measure, Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried called a press conference to blast the proposal.
30 minutes ago, I stood before the House Ag Appropriations Subcommittee. I asked them to ask themselves why. Why would we move the Office of Energy from FDACS when it's finally working, and why do we want to do it now?
Fried is calling the move a partisan power grab.
The only answer to the why is painfully clear. This bill puts party before state and puts the governor before Floridians. This is part of the governor's plan to consolidate power. We've seen it with his bill last week to strip oversight of state agencies from the independently elected Florida cabinet, and with whom 12 million voters put their faith to govern alongside the governor.
Fried told reporters she has not spoken with Governor Ron DeSantis on the matter since she became aware of the bill. The governor was in Washington, D.C. for a meeting at the White House alongside a handful of Republican state legislators Tuesday afternoon. Fried contends her agency cut administrative overhead in the energy office and has made progress on energy initiatives over the past 9 years. She says the move would set back years of progress.
Because we're not just the Department of Agriculture, but also of Consumer Services. We fight every single day for consumers in a way the Department of Environmental Protection or the governor's office, frankly, cannot do.
The two no votes on the bill came from Democrats Tina Polsky and Clovis Watson, but two other Democrats on the panel, Kristen Jacobs and Anika Omfroy, voted up on the bill. Asked about the Democratic yes votes, Fried says she can't speak for everyone in her party. The bill has one more stop, the chamber's Appropriations Committee, before it hits the House floor. I'm Ryan Daly.
Disability rights advocates say a plan to revamp the way the state's disabilities agency administers a key program marks a step in the right direction. Florida Republican Senator Aaron Bean has taken the lead on changes to the Agency for Persons with Disabilities in an attempt to stop decades of budget deficits. Lynn Hatter reports while his plan isn't perfect, advocates say it's better than where they started.
The new version of Bean's proposal backs away from the privatization of service coordinators who deal directly with disabled Floridians and their families. It keeps all budget and billing processes within APD. Now the bill places limits on certain services like supportive living coaches, residential living, and personal care assistants. Under the bill, APD would have to submit quarterly reports to the governor and legislature that include projected surpluses and deficits. The measure also lifts a requirement to prove a need before long-term care facilities for people with disabilities can be established. Disability Rights Florida's Olivia Babas believes repealing Certificate of Need for intermediate care facilities is a backward move.
You know, there isn't an adequate network of intensive behavioral group homes in Florida, so we are not giving people a choice of where they want to live, and that is really the purpose of the HCBS program, is to get people a choice of where they want to live. And ICFs are not the least restrictive environment. That really is the most restrictive environment that we can put an individual in.
Most of the comments on Bean's revised plan were mostly positive. It's designed to contain costs within the agency. This year, APD is $107 million in the red, and it's run deficits for more than a decade. But Vin Sequenzia, head of the Autism Society of Florida, says there's a big issue that remains unaddressed, the proper funding of the agency.
You keep saying live within our means. That's unfair. If you look at your own budgeting over the last 17 years, you can plainly see that there have been multiple cuts in services and provider fees. Also, APD has never been included in the budget estimating conference. Blaming the agency for funding shortfalls that legislature caused is unfair.
Sequenzia says the state has spent billions of dollars on tax breaks when it could have used that money to fund APD. At the onset of Tuesday's committee hearing, Bean addressed the funding issue.
Regardless of what we talk about in healthcare, money is the issue. We need more money, whether it was child welfare, social workers, investigative services. Everybody wants more money. There is, particularly in healthcare, there's not enough money to go around. So we do our best to ensure that that every dollar is put to use wisely. And
Bean says APD is likely to get a bigger budget this year, but he notes it's still starting from a $100 million hole. Concerns with Bean's plan remain. However, the senator says it's either his bill or the alternative.
I'll be honest with you, right now there is no companion, direct companion in the House. We're still in negotiations with them. So I greatly appreciate your trust in voting yes. Yeah, reserve the right to vote no later with that final product. But when your yes vote today, you give everybody a chance to keep this conversation going.
And that's what it comes down to. Either the Senate's plan or the possibility the House will push to privatize APD, which disability rights advocates don't want to see happen. I'm Lynn Hatter.
Still to come on Capitol Report, both local government and human rights advocates are upset about several bills working their way through the Florida legislature.
A vote for this bill is a vote to wipe out popular, successful local human rights ordinances.
Lawmakers are working on making several changes to make sure insurance companies are holding up their end of the bargain after several homeowners claim they were left high and dry after Hurricane Michael.
I still don't have enough money to rebuild my home. All I have to this day is a concrete slab.
Florida state government workers lobby for higher pay.
For too long, they have gone with far too little.
Is it a good idea for local elected officials to bring their guns to public meetings? At least one Florida lawmaker thinks it is.
Every day we get threats. We have people stalking our staff, our commissioners. We have shootings.
And inspectors say more needs to be done when bad actors are the people operating fare rides.
Less honorable operators are using our inspectors to catch their mistakes.
Support for Capital Report is provided by Cloud Navigator, providing cloud computing services and creating secure and productive workplaces for businesses and government agencies. Cloud Navigator, a Microsoft Cloud Platform partner operating throughout the Southeast. On the web at cloudnav.com.
A proposal banning local government from regulating worker conditions is now moving through the legislature, but opponents worry the bill could have unintended consequences. Robbie Gaffney has more.
More than 50 people crowded into a House committee meeting to discuss Naples Republican Representative Bob Rommel's bill. It bans cities and counties from regulating conditions of employment. He says having different rules across the state is confusing for businesses.
They can't have different wage and benefit rules in each county or municipality. It would be a nightmare. Have you seen around the nation, some municipalities have instituted their own wage and benefit laws, and it's been disastrous, especially for small businesses.
But opponents say Rommel's proposal is too broad and could repeal anything from wage theft protections to LGBTQ rights. Florida State University law professor Mary Ziegler says conditions of employment is ambiguous, which is why the bill is causing a stir.
Whenever you have an ambiguous enough bill, it is a little bit like a loaded gun, and you don't know who's going to pick it up or what they're going to try to do with it.
And that's raising eyebrows with Broward County Administrator Daphne Sewell. In 2010, Broward County commissioners voted to pass an ordinance to ban employers from stealing wages. Since then, Miami-Dade has had the largest amount of documented wage theft cases in Florida. But with Rommel's bill on the table, Sewell worries those workers won't be protected.
Broward County has a wage recovery ordinance. We have jury duty compensation, which would be wiped out.
But Representative Rommel denies that would happen.
Have I thought that this bill would hurt anybody in any manner, any form, there's no way I'd file the bill.
Wage theft wasn't the only issue raised at the meeting.
A vote for this bill is a vote to wipe out popular, successful local human rights ordinances.
That's Rich Templin with the Florida AFL-CIO, an organization that represents more than 500 labor unions. The ordinances he's referring to help protect LGBTQ people from workplace discrimination. Last year, Rommel's bill excluded those ordinances from getting repealed, but now it doesn't. Rommel says that's because it's not needed.
Whenever I work on a bill, I prefer the bill to be much cleaner, and it's not implied or, expressed anywhere. I mean, the bill's very simple. It says wages, hours, and benefits.
If Rommel's bill passes, FSU's Ziegler says someone could try challenging local human rights ordinances, but
I don't think the best interpretation of the bill as it's written, despite the ambiguities, would really justify that.
Ziegler continues.
One possibility if this law passed would be that it would be quite narrow, right? And that courts would construe it to apply only to something like predictive scheduling. Another possibility is that it could be construed so broadly to apply to literally anything about the employment relationship, including things like discrimination laws.
Rommel's bill passed its second committee meeting. It has one more stop to go before heading to the floor. The Senate version has not yet been heard. I'm Robbie Gaffney.
15 months. That's how long it's been since Hurricane Michael upended the lives of many Floridians who live in the Panhandle. For some of them, not much has changed since then. They blame that on insurance companies. Today, Chief Financial Officer Jimmy Patronis held a press conference with victims of the Category 5 hurricane to highlight legislation he says will help speed up the recovery process.
After Hurricane Michael, my house was just torn to pieces. It was very difficult. We have grandchildren living with us. We have children living with us. And then we had to find a place for everyone to stay.
That's Sandra Davis, a homeowner in Bay County. To get help, she called her insurance company. That's when the problem got worse.
Each time I called, I got someone different. I wrote down all the information every time I spoke with someone. When I would call at the end of all of this, I went back and counted 15 adjusters.
Davis wanted better treatment from the insurance company she'd been making payments to.
That's just not acceptable, not at all, because we're not insurance people. We're homeowners. This is the first time I ever made a claim. I didn't know where to go or what to do. Months later, Jimmy Petronas' office had an insurance village. So I took my lunchtime. I told the boss, I really need to talk to someone that can help me.
The help she got was a direct line to an insurance adjuster at the insurance company's home office. But the repairs still haven't been finished.
15 months later, I do not have a ceiling. I only have one room that's completely finished.
There are many more people like Davis, Petronas says.
Melaine Hardwick's home was a total loss following Hurricane Michael. She lost everything down to the concrete slab and didn't receive a dime until after 7 months after fighting with her insurance company.
After my husband passed, I purchased a home in Mexico Beach, Florida in 2014. It was going to be my retirement home. I took my retirement savings. And of course, the first thing I did was to go purchase flood insurance and wind insurance. I wanted my investment to be protected.
Hardwick bought a home she planned on renovating. She put her retirement savings into remodeling it and went through the proper process to make sure in the event of a storm, she'd be protected.
Shortly after I finished the renovations, Hurricane Michael hit and I lost my home. I lost everything. It was all gone. All I have left is a slab. That's a picture of my home right here, as you can see. There's nothing left. I was devastated.
Hardwick says she thought the process would be straightforward once the insurance company saw there is no home on the lot. But that's not what happened. First, she filed a claim with Homeowners Choice, her wind insurance company.
Every Monday, I had it on my calendar, I would call them. Many times, if I left a message, they didn't return my call. They didn't return my emails. So you can imagine my shock when one day I called again, and I was told I was denied. My claim was denied because there was no wind damage.
No wind damage during a Category 5 hurricane that reached 160 miles per hour? Hardwick says she found that odd and wants it further explanation.
I asked them what proof they had. They said they took photographs and they said they had an engineer's report. I asked for a copy. To this day, they have never provided me with the photos or the engineer's report.
She says her flood insurance only paid her a third of what the home was worth.
I still don't have enough money to rebuild my home. All I have to this day is a concrete slab.
Hardwick calls it highway robbery.
I paid my premiums and they neglected two companies to fulfill their contract. In my view, the way that Homeowners Choice treated me was right up there with criminal. They took my money and they didn't hold up their end of the contract.
That's where CFO Jimmy Petronas comes in.
This is a first step forward to changing the culture that favors insurance companies, public adjusters, contractors, and attorneys over Floridians.
Petronas is putting his weight behind a bill he calls the Consumer Protection Act. It has several elements.
We must ensure that Floridians have the information about their coverage before the hurricane starts. We must communicate. Our insurance companies must communicate more with the consumers effectively when they send a partial payment or initial estimate.
Another portion of the bill would help people like Sandra Davis, who needed to quickly start rebuilding her home so her children and grandkids could have a roof over their head.
The law requires that insurance companies settle claims in 90 days did not apply to every insurance carrier. Well, that changes starting today.
The bill would also extend the time period a consumer can cancel a contract with a property adjuster. It prohibits insurance policies sold in Florida from requiring business to be done outside of Florida. And it removes a requirement that an insured pay a $100 deductible to receive payment on their claim. The measure is sponsored by Port Orange Republican Senator Tom Wright and Jonesville Republican Representative Chuck Clements. The measure is moving through both chambers. I'm Blaze Ganey.
State workers rallied at the Florida Capitol building to demand legislators address their needs. Since Governor Ron DeSantis made the push to increase teacher pay, state workers say they want raises too. Kayla Gallagher has the story.
The American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, or AFSCME, says lawmakers should be prioritizing state workers in the 2020 budget. Tallahassee Representative Loran Osley spoke out in support.
It is well past time for our state employees to earn a living wage. And what we're talking about here is simply a cost of living adjustment. It has been more than a decade since any real across-the-board pay increase has been seen by our hardworking state employees. And over a decade is too long.
AFSCME also held rallies in Jacksonville, Tampa, and Miami. North Florida Democratic Senator Bill Montford is a prominent supporter of state workers. He says one of his top goals before the 2020 session ends is to ensure a pay increase. AFSCME political director Jackie Carmona says the union is working closely with Montford to create this change.
The message is clear. For too long, they have gone with far too little. And we are confident that this will be the year that that changes.
Recently, a legislative committee recommended across-the-board pay raises for the state's nearly 50,000 workers. I'm Kayla Gallagher.
Republican State Representative Mel Ponder wants to give school board, city, and county commission members permission to carry guns during meetings. Adriana Thomas reports.
The House Criminal Justice Committee passed the legislation Tuesday. Ponder's bill received opposing votes from three members, including Republican State Senator Spencer Roach. Roach called for the bill to be amended and said all citizens should have the right to protect themselves at public meetings.
I think it sets a dangerous precedent when the exercise of your Second Amendment right or any right is conditioned upon your employment status, and even more dangerous when it's conditioned upon your membership in the government. We are giving a superior right to government officials here that our constituents don't have.
According to Okaloosa County Commissioner Graham Fountain, the measure has been in the works for several years and is a collaboration of various commissioners, school board members, and city councilmen. Fountain believes this bill is essential to protecting elected officials.
Every day we get threats. We have people stalking our staff, our commissioners. We have shootings in the panhandle at these places. This protects us.
Several shootings have occurred across the nation in these types of meetings. In 2010, a man proceeded to fire six shots during a Bay County School District meeting after the board fired his wife. Committee Chairman James Grant says the bill is asking for elected officials serving in these capacities to be treated similar to the representatives.
I have had to have security detail. I have had consistent death threats. And all I'm simply suggesting is that our county commissioners, should they face the same, be able to carry when they meet.
Members of the legislature and citizens with concealed weapons permits are allowed to carry in the Capitol building and in the offices of officials, but not in meetings of the legislative body. I'm Adriana Thomas.
You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, as the old saying goes, it's all fun and games until somebody gets hurt. Now, as Regan McCarthy tells us, Florida lawmakers are working to keep the fun going with a bill aimed at improving the safety of fare rides.
See now? You see what I'm saying? Every one of these has an integral safety device involved. Okay. Let's go ahead and run it, and then we'll come back.
Every year, just before the North Florida Fair opens in Tallahassee, inspectors from the Florida Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services, like Alan Harrison, check those rides to be sure they're safe. The same thing happens at fairs all around the state. But Emily Buckley with the Department of Agriculture says that system leaves room for bad behavior from bad actors.
Less honorable operators are using our inspectors to catch their mistakes. So instead of looking over their rides and saying, oh, we need to fix this part or that part, they wait until our inspectors get there and go, sir, that seatbelt's broken. You have to fix that. And currently, all they have to say is, oh, yeah, I'm going to fix that before we put anyone on the ride. and they've passed inspection.
Buckley says a bill moving through the Florida House would fix that. Under the proposal, inspectors wouldn't sign off on rides until an operator has made any required repairs. And Buckley says the measure puts steeper penalties in place when safety protocols are ignored.
For example, on the swings ride that you guys see at many fairs and carnivals, the mechanism to create that actual ride to spin, you have to be pressing the button the entire time. Our inspectors have gone out there at times and found that the operator has bypassed that safety function by placing a heavy object on the button and walking away. They would not be standing there if, say, a small child or someone started to slip to take their hand off the button and stop it.
In that case, the bill raises the fines operators could face from a maximum of $2,500 to $10,000. But St. Petersburg Democratic Representative Wingay Newton says he doesn't think charging people money after something has gone wrong is the right solution.
You're going from $2,500 to $10,000. And I'm trying to see how the nexus, how is that going to keep someone from getting hurt or injured? Because that's what I'm concerned with. If you're going to do that, if you find something wrong before someone gets hurt, that's a good thing. But if it's just going to increase the fine after someone's hurt or injured, I can't understand. I'm trying to wrap my head around that. Because what's the purpose in giving them a fine after someone has been killed or injured?
But Wellington Democratic Representative Matt Wilhite says he thinks the bill would improve ride safety.
But the fine aspect is not to prevent someone, or not to say sorry, is to try and give the family some kind of maybe, the idea that the agency is trying to work for them and trying to, if they only have the ability to offer this fine, I think that's a benefit. So I think they are trying to do preventive measures, and that's why this bill is coming forward, and that's why we're voting on it, hopefully in support of it, to move it forward to make sure that all of the patrons that we represent are going to be safe at these amusement parks and on these rides.
According to the Department of Agriculture, nearly 200 amusement ride accidents were reported last year, but experts say many of those reports come from people who slip and fall when getting on or off a ride, not from a ride malfunction. I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Blaise Ganey, Robbie Gaffney, Lynn Hatter, Gina Jordan, and Regan McCarthy. Thanks also to Kayla Gallagher and Adriana Thomas. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Join us every weeknight at this time throughout the 2020 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. For more information about Capitol Report and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Rambana and Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 1 million union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flafl-cio.org.